There was a surprise announcement today from Egypt. President Hosni Mubarak proposed that more than one candidate be allowed to run in his country's presidential election in September. Egyptian presidents traditionally run unopposed. Mr. Mubarak said he wanted to start a new era on the path toward reform. Just yesterday, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice abruptly canceled a visit to Egypt, apparently to show U.S. displeasure with the arrest of a government opponent. The Bush administration has made promoting democracy a centerpiece of its foreign policy. When President Bush met Russian President Vladimir Putin this week in Slovakia, much of the talk was about democracy and whether Russia was backtracking on the path toward democratic reforms.
This meeting also gave me an opportunity to share my belief that it's in my country's interest that Russia be a strong and viable partner with the United States. It's very important that we establish not only a working relationship, but that we understand that in the 21st century, strong countries are built by developing strong democracies. And so we talked about democracy.
President Putin defended his government against criticism it had cracked down on the press, private business, and political opponents.
Russia has made its choice in favor of democracy 14 years ago, independently, without any pressure from outside.
In an interview with Slovak media, Mr. Putin asked why some countries can enjoy stability while others are, as he put it, doomed to permanent revolution. It seemed to be a reference to Russia's neighbors, Georgia and Ukraine, which have seen their governments toppled by popular protests. Those who made the revolutions in Georgia and Ukraine had support from the United States, financial, moral, and professional. Thomas Carruthers is a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for Peace. He tracks democratic movements around the world.
Well, in Russia, as in other parts of the former Soviet Union, the United States, really since the collapse of the Soviet Union, the United States has been engaged at several levels to try to promote democracy. First, at this diplomatic level, you remember President Clinton and President Yeltsin having different kinds of bear hugs and love fests of different types. But at a different level, quieter, in some ways just as important or maybe more important, the United States supports a number of non-governmental organizations, American ones that go over and do work in Russia and the other countries of the former Soviet Union, to support independent media, to support groups that might want to observe elections, human rights organizations, women's organizations, lots of non-governmental groups trying to expand both the political and the civic space in those countries. It's quiet work, but as we saw in Ukraine and Georgia in the last couple of years, when this comes together with genuine domestic political and sort of civic movements, this kind of work can suddenly take on a character of being catalytic or even transformative.
So you draw a direct link then between the activities of U.S. taxpayer-funded NGOs in this area, in Ukraine, for example.
What happened in Ukraine was not a made-in-the-USA revolution, as some have said. It was a made-in-Ukraine revolution, and a good one. The United States gave a helping hand to some of the groups. But as we saw in Belarus, where some of the same work was done, if the domestic groups don't have the force and the energy and the skill and the courage to do it, American or other types of external assistance can't do it.
What determines where the U.S. spends money to promote democracy?
Well, you know, the United States announces these things as though it's a grand principle, but let's be honest with ourselves. There are places where the United States pushes on this and places where it doesn't, where the United States has other interests, like oil and gas in Central Asia and Kazakhstan or Azerbaijan. The United States goes easy on strongmen. So we'll stand up for it in places like Ukraine or Georgia, where we don't really have countervailing economic or security interests, but where we do, we tend to go easy.
There are elections, parliamentary elections Sunday in Kyrgyzstan, and presidential elections later this year there. And there the president, Akayev, first seemed like an untainted outsider with the support of reformers. And then he seems to have backtracked a lot. What's happening?
Well, Kyrgyzstan was the big hope in the 1990s in Central Asia for democracy. It was, you know, some people even used to sort of joke and call it the Switzerland of Central Asia. It certainly was the most open. But unfortunately, it has tended to happen in other places. Vested interests start getting entrenched, and president starts to enjoy being in power and doesn't want to give it up. And there's been a sense of narrowing of political space in the last 5 years in Kyrgyzstan. So these elections are particularly important for that reason.
One of the people who's working hard to ensure that tomorrow's election in Kyrgyzstan will be fair is Adil Baysalov. He heads a group called the Coalition for Democracy and Civil Society. We reached him in Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan, and asked him what his group has been able to accomplish with the funds that it receives from the U.S.
Since early December, we had a network of 120 long-term observers around the country who monitored the pre-election period. things like voter registration and candidate registration and election campaigning. We had a group of NGOs who worked on voter mobilization. And they went door to door. We published posters. We distributed leaflets calling on voters, especially on young voters and women voters, to be more active in the, during the election period.
Are all the members of your staff Kyrgyz?
Yes, we are a domestic organization. We have all members who are local NGOs.
But I understand much of your funding comes from an American group?
That's correct. Most of that funding comes from the U.S. Agency for International Development. But more importantly, in the knowledge and know-how, we were consulted by the National Democratic Institute, which is based in Washington.
What's the most interesting thing they told you, or something that was the most surprising?
It's hard to say. You know, there are many concepts which were absent in our society, which, you know, after the fall of the totalitarian Soviet Union, never existed. For example, we never knew what civic participation was or about what the relationship between citizen and the government. And, you know, it just helps us to formulate this sort of knowledge which we try to deliver to our citizens.
What was your reaction to events in Georgia in 2003 when mass protests helped change government there, and then last year the same thing in Ukraine, the so-called Orange Revolution?
You know, I happened to be in Ukraine when this so-called Orange Revolution took place. And we had 75 members of our group in Ukraine as international election observers. You know, it really was a formative experience for all of us.
Edil Baysalov heads the Coalition for Democracy and Civil Society in Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jennifer.